TFM.
This is J.G. Hertz, the General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I hope that you brought plenty of bars of Gold Press Latinum, because you're going to need them to buy your way through this episode today.
Well, Chris, I have kind of emptied the vault, and I do hope I have enough, because I feel like there's just so many good things in this auction that I've never seen before, because, you know, they're from that other side of the galaxy, and, you know, I just can't wait to own what I'm not even quite sure is actually valuable, because, well, I really don't know anything about the Gamma Quadrant, but at least I'll be the only one that owns it, so, you know, that's got to count for something.
It's got to. I love how Quark says, don't give any background to the item. It's just, it's kind of short. It's cute. It's sparkly. It's rare. You need it. You need it now. Buy it. And then everyone just starts bidding.
Yes. I thought that was really funny because, I guess we'll get into it in the episode.
Yeah, we'll get into it as we go. So, yes, everyone, we're going to continue our 30th anniversary rewatch of Star Trek Deep Space Nine today with episode 6 of season 1. This is Q-less, and here is a quick rundown. The arrival of Vash, whom Dax found in the Gamma Quadrant, brings incredible profit potential to Quark, but great danger to the station. Tagging along with her is none other than Q, seemingly there to deliver his usual brand of havoc. He doesn't hit it off well with Sisko, though, and that might be why he is blamed for the mysterious graviton pulses that threaten to tear the station apart. Only it turns out that the danger comes not from Q, but rather a baby alien being auctioned off by new business partners Quark and Vash, a realization that comes just in time. So, Matthew, you're going to really want to save your Gold Press Latinum to buy the little golden egg at the end, because that's the must-have item.
Yes. That's what I hear. That's what I hear is the nicest one.
But it's not going to stick around for long, because it wants to go home. So, let's just jump into the discussion here, and maybe start with the premise of this episode, which, as viewers, we always think of as bringing Q back. But the original concept of this episode actually didn't even involve Q. It was just a Vash story. Let's bring Vash to DS9. Mm-hmm. And that I find interesting, and I think probably makes sense with the idea that she had been in the Gamma Quadrant and she's going to come back, because there's that opportunity that we keep talking about of discovering new previously unknown civilizations, and here you could learn about their artifacts, things that are on the other side of the wormhole. But then Michael Piller said, well, why don't we bring Q back? It makes sense. It's a good opportunity. And then we get them both. So what do you think, though, about building an episode of DS9 around Vash?
I don't think it's necessarily a bad idea. You know, we do have the fact that the Gamma Quadrant is now open and a place to explore. And of course, there would be hundreds and hundreds of thousands of worlds, you know, which would be great. And I think that her being the type of character who is, you know, she's somewhat interested in archaeology, but more so in ways that she can make money. You know, I think that that's not a terrible plot line for a Deep Space Nine episode. Now, on the other side of that, though, I also find bringing her back specifically an interesting choice because, you know, Vash is so linked to the character of Captain Picard, this love interest really for him, somebody who kind of shares one of his passions, which is archaeology, but in a completely different way. You know, I would say Vash is like Indiana Jones in the Temple of Doom, and Picard is like Indiana Jones in The Last Crusade, where one is has learned the value of all these things beyond the money you can make from it. And you know, so there's that interesting juxtaposition between those characters. So bringing Vash back, you know, here on Deep Space Nine, I think is a harder thing to do because I don't think she has an immediate, like, value in the show in the same way that she did for TNG. Mm-hmm. So I think just starting with even, okay, let's bring Vash back is a difficult premise, if you ask me, to make it a really interesting Deep Space Nine story.
Mm-hmm. But she pairs well with Quark, though, the idea that she wants to collect these things and maybe she can sell them. And she says in here that she'll choose profit every time. And of course, that gets Quark's attention. And as soon as he realizes that she has something valuable, he wants to get his hands on it. And then when he realizes that she's also in it for the profit, then he feels like he can really work with her. And she's a character that's familiar to TNG viewers. And of course, also rewinding. This is what we always have to do these days when we think about DS9 is try to rewind our minds to when the show first aired and the close proximity that we had to Cupid and Captain's Holiday and having seen Vash and her being someone who we were a lot more familiar with at the time. Like she's more in our head because we had seen her more recently on the screen. And I think that, yeah, for me, I think it she's not someone that I would have maybe thought of if I were if I were a writer on the show back then, maybe I would have thought of her because I would have been really thinking about, well, who can we bring back? But as a fan, let's put it that way, she's not someone that I would have probably put on a list of probable TNG characters to show up on Deep Space Nine. But actually, I personally feel like it was a pretty good choice to bring her on. And I like the character. I think she's interesting. I think Jennifer Hedrick's great as a character, so I like to see her on there as well. As does Julian, as we'll talk about here. Maybe that's the next thing we could talk about, bringing her. I said hold she pairs well with Quark, but then you bring her back in and she's got Julian's attention.
I think that the idea and what you said, I think to me, the cell is more difficult, but I think, like you said, they found the right pairing with her and Quark, which makes for, I think, a very good episode then, because they're peas in a pod when it comes to how they feel about money. I mean, they're on the same track. And so I think that's the thing that ends up working very well. And so when I was kind of talking about it and through it at the beginning there, it's like, okay, to me, that's the thing you're thinking about as the writer. Like, how do we work this character in so she just doesn't feel like the fan service? Like, hey, remember Vash?
Right.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
So again, I think like what you said, when you pair her with Quark, it creates the place then where she feels like she fits. And, you know, in all honesty, I think the beauty of Deep Space Nine is that it's a stop stopping place for people. Mm-hmm. It's a place where people are going to, if they're going to the Gamma Quadrant, they're going to stop at Deep Space Nine. If they're coming back from the Gamma Quadrant, they're going to stop at Deep Space Nine. So it allows you to have that commerce in the same way that the frontier town did, you know, in Gunsmoke, where people come and go. And that's the whole point of doing, you know, Deep Space Nine in the first place. That's how you can make the show very interesting without actually going anywhere. So I think you're 100% right on that. And then, you know, of course, you've got Bashir and Vash, and the fact that Bashir is looking for love in all the wrong places. But, you know, the episode does start with him being very successful in having this date with this Bajoran woman. And, you know, she is on the edge of her seat with his story. And,
well, it is a riveting story, Matthew. I mean, you would be on the edge of your seat as well, right?
I'm on the edge of my seat right now just thinking about it. And, but I think what we get here is a picture of what it is that women find attractive about Bashir is his confidence. He has a confidence in himself. And the other thing is, I don't even think Bashir is a bad guy. I think Bashir is just you know, he is definitely a little overeager in looking for love. Mm-hmm. And yet he is definitely looking for it. And I do think the thing that is a little bit swarmy about him in this episode is that he was just on a great date and then he's trying to pick up Vash the very next day. So, you know, apparently... Right. You know, he's not above like you know, just being a serial dater at this point.
Yeah. Although,
but then
do we know for sure that he was on a date though? Because I also got the impression that he may have just been talking up somebody in the on the promenade or wherever they are at the beginning.
Oh, it could be. Yeah.
Because O'Brien is like sitting right over near him, and can actually hear the whole story. And so it could just be like an encounter there as opposed to an actual date. That was the impression I got. But your point is well taken, yeah.
No, I mean, I think you're right in the sense that, you know, we don't know what the situation was there. It is definitely just clear that we have a man who is rapacious in his search for female companionship at the moment.
Yeah.
And she, Vash, is also somebody who is not above just enjoying herself. And so you put these two characters together and it makes for a lot of fun, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Okay, so about the Q aspect of the story then, bringing Q on, again, I said at the beginning, we tend to think about this as the episode where they wanted to bring Q on DS9 and they found a way to do it. And I think that if you don't know the history of the development of the story, it probably feels more like we wanted to bring Q on. What else can we do? Oh, why don't we have Vash come on as well? But as you watch the story, you know, it very much is a Vash story and Q is just there tagging along. And in the DS9 companion, John Delancey talks about the fact that Q is there. And he said Q is best used when he deals with large philosophical issues, and skirt chasing just isn't one of them. And you could read this episode as Q tagging along, chasing Vash, because there's some kind of romance there and he doesn't want to lose her. But he says this thing near the very end when she tells him to really go away. And he mentions that when he looks out, he just sees a cloud of dust. When he sees a nebula, he sees a cloud of dust. But when he sees the universe through her eyes, he sees something different. And that made me think that maybe it isn't so much like he's chasing her because there's a romantic element to it. It's that he genuinely enjoys her companionship to be able to explore the galaxy and the universe in another way.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's a really interesting take. And I think that's exactly what this story is truly about, is the fact that we see Q being somewhat bored with his own existence.
Yeah,
and
right.
It's the fact that he's seen everything and done everything, which is very interesting because that's actually going to play into the Q episode that we're going to get on Voyager, right? It's that same attitude that leads that Q to want to end his existence, which makes for, of course, a very interesting conversation. And we'll have that when we get to our Voyager, you know, rewatch for its next anniversary. But I think the thing that would have been more interesting in the episode is to focus on that more than anything else. Mm-hmm. To really explore Q's emotional well-being. And Deep Space Nine, I think, is the right place to be able to do that. But I think, unfortunately, this episode leans into the campy spectacle that we kind of expect when Q comes on The Next Generation. Mm-hmm. And they're writing it as if Q should be approached like a Next Generation episode. But this is Deep Space Nine. And so I think this would be the place to actually kind of explore the deeper character of Q, and they, of course, just don't really go there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. They're approaching it like it should be read as a TNG-style Q mystery, I guess, but it's set on DS9. And there's been a lot of talk over the years among the writers and actors about the atmosphere of doing this episode and the fact that it is so early in the first season that the DS9 cast and crew, but the cast in particular, are all very new in their roles and in doing Star Trek, whereas John DeLancey had had the experience. I mean, he was on a total of 8 episodes on The Next Generation. So at this point, I'd have to go back and count for sure. But at this point, it's 6 or 7, I guess, because obviously All Good Things is at the end. And then, yeah, so 6 or 7. And he's familiar with the character, obviously, very much, and in being on set to shoot Star Trek. And so there's this sort of balance in the atmosphere of him being the guest star and them being the regulars, but it kind of maybe feeling the other way. But that kind of plays into the story as well, what you're saying here of there's this feeling of it's like the mystery that would be happening aboard the Enterprise that Q is creating as some sort of game to harass Picard in particular and to see how the Enterprise crew could figure it out. But the difference here is that he's not the one causing it. He just happens to be on the station because Vash is there and he's trying to get her to head back out with him, and he's not responsible for any of the stuff that's going on, but he is enjoying seeing how long it will take Sisko and the station crew to figure out the mystery. So I actually put on the outline here a Q-less mystery, because it is a mystery not being caused by Q, and this is another case of differentiating TNG and DS9 in that the cause of the problem, the mystery they're trying to solve, is something inherent to DS9 as a series coming from the Gamma Quadrant. This mystery, this alien life form, embryonic life form. So there's that element to it. And then there's the fact that Sisko and Q obviously don't hit it off the same way. And that's another point of differentiating the two series.
Yeah, I mean, ain't love a punch in the head? I mean, isn't that how you say hello and that you love somebody? I think that you pinpointed something really interesting because, you know, for a lot of the Q episodes on TNG, Q is causing the mischief. Mm-hmm. And yet here, he just knows what's happening because he's Q, but it's something that Vash has actually caused by her bringing these artifacts back from the Gamma Quadrant and not actually knowing what they are. And so I think that what then becomes the center point of the episode beyond what's happening with Vash is just us seeing the way in which Q and Sisko interact, which is like oil and water. Mm-hmm. And to me, I think what's great, and we've and maybe the best part of this episode to me is we've talked about how each episode in some way has been differentiating itself from TNG. And so this immediately differentiates Sisko from Picard. He is a little bit, even though this sounds strange, he's even more no-nonsense than Picard. He's not willing to put up with people messing with his crew and his station. And I do think that a part of that comes from the fact that Sisko's running a station that has people here who live here that don't have anything to do with Starfleet. They're not on an exploratory mission, right? Mm-hmm. They're just living here because this is where they live. This is where they work. And so therefore, whereas Picard is on a ship where that's their whole goal and is more willing to then interact with a character like Q so they can maybe figure out more about them, I think Sisko has to think about more than, you know, just the idea of what can we figure out about this alien race.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, it just makes for a really interesting thing. And I think it also makes, if you had basically just done the same thing, it would not have worked at all. So I'm really glad that they took the track that they did with him and Q, made it very different.
Yeah. I'm glad they didn't just make it like a TNG episode where he was causing the problem and then the crew had to figure it out, because then I really would have felt like, okay, this is fan service. We're just trying to get eyeballs on DS9. Let's bring Q over. You know, it makes sense. Of course, he's one of the most popular recurring aliens. Let's have him come over. Sisko, first of all, are you disappointed that the nickname Benji didn't stick through the whole series? When he calls him Benji?
I'm glad that did not stick, because, you know, then I would only think of the dog from the Benji movies. And, I don't really think that's appropriate for our captain, and or commander at this point. So.
Exactly. I think Sisko, he's maybe more no nonsense than Picard, like you say, but there's also the fact that Picard is so intellectual about things, and Sisko is more practical. Just, he assesses the situation, he makes a quick decision about it. It's often largely driven by emotion, and he just doesn't have time for Q's games. And he also mentions that he had been to a Starfleet briefing 2 years earlier about Q. And you get the feeling that maybe everyone's been told that if Q shows up, don't engage with him. Just try to shut him down as quickly as you can and don't play the games. Maybe that's part of what they were told. And another reason that Sisko doesn't want to engage with him. And of course, also Sisko's heard how dangerous he can be.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and I think, too, it's pretty clear already that Sisko just is not somebody who likes to be pushed around.
Yeah.
You know? And,
I thought he was going to deck Q when Q said, it's no wonder you're not commanding a starship. Did you see the look on Sisko's face?
Yes.
He was about to jump on him there, too.
Yeah. I thought that was... I think it's, you know... Q likes to push people's buttons and be kind of a bully. And, Picard never really stood up to him in that way. And so I think, again, what you get here with the interaction between Sisko and Q is somebody who's willing to stand up to a bully and punch him in the nose, you know, which you notice Q never comes back. You know, like most bullies, he gets pushed around here and... He never comes back. So maybe all Starfleet captains should have just punched him in the face and, he would never return to their starship.
So, yeah, he'd be like, I don't want to mess with those humans. They always just punch me right in the face as soon as I get there.
Exactly.
This is getting old.
Can you imagine Janeway punching me in the face? That would have been awesome.
I can't imagine her doing it, yeah. Especially like macrocosm Janeway with the big, with the muscles. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or in the episode where he wants to, you know, sleep with her so that they can have a child together. I mean, that seems right for a smack, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
You know, one of the things, though, that I do think is kind of interesting about the episode, Chris, is the way in which we kind of see the unethical collector here. And, you know, people who they have no idea where these things have come from. And it's really just about the prestige of owning something that nobody else has. But it's the unethical nature in which they've been acquired. You know, like we already know Vash has no, she's like an amoral character, basically. So you think about the fact that whatever it is that she's taken is a relic from someplace in the Gamma Quadrant. And this could be a part of the heritage of a, you know, a society that we know nothing about.
Yeah, and she may have very well stolen these things, right, rather than unearthing them.
Yes. And I think that that's an interesting thing, and it's also something I would have liked maybe a little bit more explored as well in the episode, because, you know, it does seem like that is the kind of thing, you know, this is a Bajoran station that's administered by Starfleet, and you would think that the Bajorans, who have had their own society ravaged by the Cardassians, would be kind of sensitive to the idea that somebody would be using their station to do that with artifacts from the Gamma Quadrant, which we have no idea how they've been acquired. Mm-hmm. And so I think what it comes down to is that I see there's a lot of different places in this episode where if it had been written in like the third or fourth season, they would have taken it to the next level.
Yeah.
And because this is the first season, we're basically only scratching the surface. And when you actually look at the episode and you kind of analyze it, there's a lot below the surface that you could get into. And they just, you know, they don't get into it in this episode.
Right. Well, because the foundation isn't really there yet, I would say for that. Like,
right, exactly.
I mean, we can look back knowing how everything plays out and how the Bajoran culture is developed. We can look back at the early episodes and maybe spot some of that and feel like it's there a little bit more than it really was at that point. In reality, there was, not enough foundation there yet for them to play into that angle. But yeah, it would be fascinating to see this episode in the fifth season, for example, and what they might have done with the archaeological aspects or the cultural treasure aspects of it. And it would have been a totally different story. And it's one that you could easily do without Q being there at all. You could just have Vash there.
Right.
And you also would have had, I think, there would have been more ways at that point to get her there rather than this explanation that Q took her there. I think this explanation works well, though, for this story because there's been no way to travel to the Gamma Quadrant quickly until very recently. And then they revealed that she's been there for 2 years. Well, how did she get there? That's quite a mystery. Oh, well, Q snapped his fingers and took them there. That explains everything. Mm-hmm. But it does work for this story. So that's an interesting way of looking
at it. I agree. Yeah, no, and I'm not faulting them at all. I mean, again, we're in the first season of this show, and every first season of every show, you know, you're trying to kind of figure out who you are. And more difficultly, they've just come off most of TNG and are trying to figure out what the identity of Deep Space Nine is going to be. Now, they've done, I think, a pretty decent job of that so far. Mm-hmm. But obviously, we have miles to go, as you know, the poem would say, before we sleep. And we definitely have miles to go before they figure out what the identity of Deep Space Nine is going to be in juxtaposition to, you know, what we get on TNG, or then of course Voyager afterwards. And so, but I think that what this episode does show is that they understand enough their difference from TNG, and they're obviously trying to approach things differently. And I can't say that it's a terrible, you know, there's nothing bad about this episode. There's nothing wrong with this episode. It just, it kind of lacks a little bit in the execution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, talking about them finding the identity of the series over time, one great thing about this episode is this is how Robert Hewitt Wolf found his way onto the writing staff. It's his first writing on DS9, and he was tasked with taking the original story that wasn't working and finding a way to make it work. And because of the job that he did, and Ira really loved it, and they actually hired him onto the staff. So when we think about, like, when we watch the DS9 documentary and we see that core writing room together, hashing out the opening of an 8th season of Deep Space Nine, and we see how brilliantly that group works together. Here's where one important member of that team, you know, comes aboard with an episode that I think otherwise we feel is maybe mediocre at best, right?
Well, and it's interesting to me too. It makes me wonder just how badly the episode wasn't working, you know. And
okay, so yeah. Well, that's interesting because Robert talks about the fact that in the original story, there's like a whole other part of the story after the alien baby hatches and goes off, and then the story moves off the station. There's like a bunch of story after what we see here, and of course what came before maybe isn't exactly what we see here, of course, because he reworked the story, but it was just quite a different story. There was even less Q involved, especially in that latter portion of the story. And he said he came in and he just, you know, he picked the segment that he focused on here for the final script and said, this is the sweet spot, this is where the story works, and then evolved that into the story that we got. So it sounds like the original story was a little bit more, I'm going to say, all over the place. And I don't know exactly what happened in the original concept of the story and the original outline, but there was more going on, which leads to a less focused story. And in this case, I think it might have been difficult to follow, and you would just feel that disjointedness probably.
Well, and I think it's probably a good thing then, and obviously, that Wolf comes in and changes things here, because it would be very frustrating to have a less focused story. I think this episode does really benefit from the fact that it is kind of a simple story. And therefore, it's really just more about enjoying the performances and the pieces that we're getting about our characters that we're still getting to know on the station. And yeah, it would definitely have been worse if we were going all over the place with this episode. So I'm glad that they did what they did, because yeah, I can't imagine trying to do like 3 other things in this episode and trying to make that work.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, I think we've covered pretty much all the points of this one. So what are your final thoughts on it, and what's your rating?
I think that this is a fine episode in the sense that it's like fine. Yeah, it's fine. You know, there's nothing, I think, special about it other than the fact that, you know, Q gets punched in the face, which is great. Who hasn't wanted to punch Q in the face? I mean, I know, I think every fan has felt that way about him as a character at one point or another. And so, otherwise, it's maybe one of the weaker episodes. I think it is definitely a weaker episode here in season one. And so I would probably give it 3 out of 5 unknown Delta Quadrant artifacts.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, for me, I've come around, and actually the rewatch here for this discussion has continued the transition in my view of this episode. So this is an episode which, if you dig through the Trek FM back catalog, I'm sure you can find me talking about this several times. I know you and I have talked about it here and there on the Orb in the past. I think we may have done a commentary. I can't remember now if we did or not. But on the Ready Room, I'm sure we've discussed it before and probably elsewhere for me. And I always tended to focus on the Q element, maybe a little bit too much, because going back to when it first aired, maybe when it first aired and the first time I saw it, I thought, oh, it was okay. But then when I rewatch it a little bit, I feel a little bit more like, yeah, Q really doesn't fit in to DS9. And I think this episode, the way this story played out, shows you exactly why Q never came back to DS9. And he even mentions at the end, maybe I'll drop back in sometime. And Vash says, oh God, I hope not. And it was, it echoes a feeling I think I would have now watching it. Like, yeah, I hope, like, I like Q, but I don't like Q in the context of DS9. And anyway, the transition in my view of the episode that I mentioned, however, is that more and more and more I see it as a Vash episode. And now I see it as her and Quark. And then I see it as developing Quark's character more, and also the station environment more. And as I see it more and more as a DS9, a foundational story for DS9, instead of the Q episode of DS9, then I like it a bit more. And I was also thinking they could have called this episode An Abundance of Umaks, but
yeah, the less said about Umaks, the better. But yeah,
I just, this time watching it, I did notice how often Vash resorts to Umaks to get her way with Quark. So
anyway, yeah,
that was interesting. But yeah, I don't know. I've come to like the episode a bit more over the years, but I still think it's one of the weaker episodes of season one. But I'll give it 6 graviton pulses.
Nice.
All right, everyone. We would love to hear your thoughts on Q-less. What did you think about Q's appearance on DS9? Vash coming to the station. There are many ways for you to share your thoughts with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. It is a closed group just for listeners to extend the conversation beyond the podcasts. So if you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. And the way to find it is to type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook. It should come right on up. If not, just type the whole name, the Babel Conference. You'll find a post for this episode on the timeline, and you can share your comments with Matthew and me and fellow listeners right there. And we'd love to have you join the Babel Conference. If you'd like to send us email, you can go to our website, trek.fm/contact. You'll find a form there. Use that form, choose to send to a show, choose the Orb, and that will come to Matthew and me. And if you'd like to find us on social media, our username everywhere is TrekFM. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we'd love to get that from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not taking pickup tips from Julian Bashir, figuring out, you know, your best story about how you became the salutatorian of your class, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me all over social media under the name MattRushing02, Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, Vero, the places I'm most active. You can also find me here on the network. We have a whole other side of the network devoted to not Star Trek, but all of those other fandoms that we love. It's called the 602 Club, and I do hope that you'll join us over there. It's a lot of fun. We have a great time talking about everything under the sun other than Star Trek. Now, if you want more Star Trek, we've got Literary Treks about the books and the comics of Star Trek I'm doing. We've got Warp 5. Chris, you and I are doing the 20th anniversary rewatch of Enterprise. We've got Saddle Up about Strange New Worlds. And The artificial tango, Chris, is back because season three of Picard is here. And man, do I love doing that artificial tango. You know, which reminds me, I might need to get that hip checked. Anyway, but Chris, while I'm doing that, where could people find you?
Well, I'm doing the same thing. You know, I'm getting a little bit more flexible so we can get through season three of Picard there on the artificial tango. And when we're not doing that, you can find me on the other shows with you that we do together here on the network. Also, Larry Nemechek and I do the Ready Room from time to time, and you'll find me in all sorts of things in the back catalog. And if you'd like to chat with me in social media, you can find me under the username C Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. That is my username everywhere in social media. Twitter is where I'm most active. I'm also on Mastodon, Trekkies.social/instance, C. Brian Jones. You can find me there, and I'd love to chat with you. And if you would like to help us keep this rewatch and all the other shows that we're doing on the network going, we could definitely use your help. To find out how to get involved, just visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. You can become an associate producer of our rewatches. You can get involved in other ways. We'd love to have your support, and we wouldn't be here without that support. It's only thanks to all of you listening who are supporting us through Patreon that we're able to put these podcasts out to you. So thank you so much to everyone who is supporting us there. Well, Matthew, I'm looking forward to next time when I think we're going to find Dax in a little bit of hot water.
Well, Chris, I can't wait to see what happens there, but thank you everybody for joining us, and we will see you next time as we gaze into the orb.